untold crime and penalties, how much he knew about them before he started doing the film. McLean Wade joins us now. McLean, welcome to the show. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Hey, thanks for having me on. We'll just do a little table setting. I'll make sure to hide all the any spoilers and Easter eggs so your audience can you guys can all watch it and dive in, and we can chat more about it once you guys have had a chance to watch it. But thanks for having me on. Super appreciate it.
Well, no, I appreciate it. I watched it when it came out right away. I'd seen the previews. And I was like, oh, I got to watch this. And I did some research. Like, how did I not hear about this? Like, it's kind of like a real life Slapshot with obviously a pretty big twist. But for you, McLean, how much were you aware? Like, when did you come aware of this story? And how were you able to convince, the main characters to come on camera and talk about it?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, to be honest, I grew up a big sports fan and would watch hockey on, SportsCenter highlights more so, but didn't really grow up watching like a lot of NHL hockey games. Grew up in Los Angeles, so we'd make it out to like Kings games every now and then. But just as a sports fan, it wasn't, the Danbury Trashers was not a story that was super on my radar. I heard like rumors and grumblings of this kind of mythic minor league hockey team that was quote unquote kind of owned by the mob. It was a man named Jimmy Galante there was rumored that Tony Soprano was based off of him, and he bought a minor league hockey team for his hockey obsessed and Mighty Ducks obsessed 17-year-old son, AJ Galante, buys this hockey team and installs AJ as the president and general manager. And it's usually at that point that I like to say, and madness ensues. That's pretty much what the documentary is about. You have to watch it to kind of see what all that madness is. But we were doing a five film sports documentary series for Netflix, very similar to 30 for 30. We just wanted to kind of tell the best sports stories that, had maybe they've been covered, but they haven't really been told in long form documentaries. And this story came across our radar and we just jumped at the opportunity. I hit up AJ Galante incessantly every day for about 3 weeks until he finally got back to me. I gave him the pitch on what I wanted to do. He was super supportive, but he said, listen, like, you got to go to my, I want to do this, but my dad's his own man. My dad, his name's Jimmy. He's a straight shooter. You're going to have to talk to him. And so I flew out to Danbury, and Jimmy picked me up at my hotel that I was staying at, and it was the first time I was meeting him. And we didn't really talk much about the doc on the car ride over, but we're just having small, pleasant chit-chat. And he asked me, okay, what do you want to do? And I felt like I had 2 minutes to convince him to do it. He was either going to give me the yay or the nay, but I took my two-minute shot, and I laid it all out, the vision, the idea, the plan, and he kind of cut me off about a minute in, and he said, all right, I'm in. And then after that, the rest was kind of history, and we got to make this thing. So that's really how it all started.
Yeah, and so then you dive into it. Was there a few, like, there's obviously a lot of it, but like getting the footage of watching what happened on the ice, were you kind of like, how many hours of footage did you have to go through to get what you guys all, because obviously I know you leave a lot on the cutting room floor. So was it difficult to decide which footage and then which characters which players to interview?
It was, and we ended up pulling a tremendous amount of footage. And, we're talking 2004, 2005, 2006 minor league hockey. And so, the games are filmed and maybe they have a couple cameras, down by the ice that kind of have different camera angles to cut to. And then when the Trashers would go on road games, we would try to hit up those home cities to see if they had any footage. But, we like strikes and gutters, we got some great miracle finds that we were so happy with. One of the big added elements, which she doesn't get enough credit, but AJ's mom was one of those moms that just filmed everything on her VHS camera. So I remember hanging out with AJ one day, and I brought up archive footage and what existed, and he was like, dude, I have more than you want to know. And it was like organized and transferred to DVDs, and it was basically AJ's life from the time he was born to the time that he was 17 years old, all captured on camera. So that was an immense find. And then in terms of just getting the guys, that just starts with conversations with Jimmy and AJ. We got their equipment manager, a man named Tommy Pompicello, who really helped AJ put the team together, and the players, Brad Wingnut Wingfield, Arnold, who is one of the all-time leaders in penalty minutes in minor league hockey. A man named David Beauregard, who has a fascinating story. He got drafted by the Sharks and ended up losing his eye in a breakaway, yeah. but stuck with hockey and never really made it up to the show, but had great years as a minor league hockey player. A couple of brothers named Drew and Mike Omacholi. A man named Ruman Endor, also known as the Nigerian Nightmare. You know, we kind of started hearing the nicknames. Mike Rupp also played for the team during the lockout. So you kind of start hearing these names and these stories and these mythic players. And then, you know, you pick up the phone and you start calling them. And really, like, it became clear that this was, like, even for someone like Mike Rupp, who obviously won the Stanley Cup, only played for the Trashers for a shortened season, but incredibly memorable experience. I think a lot of these guys talk about their couple of years in Danbury as, you know, definitely the highlight of their professional career. So at that point, we had the characters, we had the footage, we were getting these stories back, and we knew, like, all right, we're going to have a pretty special documentary to make here.
It was very unique. I thoroughly enjoyed it. As a sports fan, I love kind of unearthing new things that I didn't really know about. As McLean Way joins us, he's director of Untold Crime and Penalties. You can get it on Netflix, and it's a documentary. So you also did Malice at the Palace?
So this is all a part of Untold, yes, which is like this kind of new Netflix sports documentary anthology series. Each documentary is its own sports stories, but yeah, my brother and I, we produced the entire series. It was the first thing that we've really done. We did a documentary series for Netflix back in 2018 called Wild Wild Country that was about a cult in Oregon. This couldn't, very different stories. But like I said, we always grew up sports fans. We always wanted to tell the Malice in the Palace story. Felt like no one had really done it before. And that was the first one that kicked it off. We produced that one. We didn't direct it. Crime and Penalties, the one on the Danbury Trashers, we both got to produce and direct. But all these, we call all these our babies and our children, and we've loved making them.
Oh, buddy, I love Malice at the Palace, man. It's fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
Like, it gave me a real difference. Like, obviously, I knew that one, what had happened, but just the behind the scenes is fantastic for sports fans. And, I know we're talking about, Crime and Penalties, but I think people, once they get hooked on one, Christy Martin, man, I started watching that one. I just got into it. I was like, oh my God, I'd never even heard of her. And I was like, this story is crazy. So yeah, I've really enjoyed them. You get to the Crime and Penalties, and obviously, you know, it's hockey, and then there's, you know, the criminal side of it, of course. Was that hard to, you know, get? Because, you know, the Galantes, I give them credit. Like, they didn't shy away from kind of their past, I guess, is a fair way to say.
No, I mean, it's like credit's given where credit's due. And that really goes to, like, Jimmy and AJ. And that, it's you know, when you're meeting people for the first time and you're introducing yourself and you obviously have a dream to make a project with them, there's things that you assume are going to be tough or delicate to talk about. And Jimmy and AJ set the tone really early with us. And it's, in hindsight, it's something I just have so much respect for, where they're just like, listen, you can't run away from your past. Things happen in there. Don't shy away. Don't dance around. Ask us straight questions. We'll give you straight answers on what it was like. And, you know, Jimmy's lived one of those lives. I always say it's like the guy almost belongs in like a Martin Scorsese film or something. You know what I mean? He founded the largest waste hauling company with one trash truck in Connecticut, and he grew it into a business empire that was valued at over $200 million. It was the largest waste hauling empire on the East Coast. He got into race car driving. He just has done all this fascinating chapters of his life. He did a stint for a year on tax evasion charges in 99. He obviously gets into additional trouble with the FBI later on in his life. But, you know, Jimmy's one of those guys that, you know, one of the first lines in the documentary says, he's like, I can wake up every day, I look myself in the mirror, and I don't have a problem with what I see. And we kind of approached him the same way in the documentary. We didn't really pull punches, but they were open books. You know, they knew it was a part of the story. And ultimately, I think that they told us that, you know, they thought we did a real accurate portrayal of the story. So I'm happy to report that.
Yeah, and McLean, that was one of my questions. When you're doing a documentary and people agree to do it, do they have a say in what the ultimate final production looks like? Or once they agree to it, it's like, no, if you agree to do the interviews, then we put it together. How does that work?
It's definitely more of the latter. You know, it's like we did it.
Okay.
at the end of the day, we're the filmmakers. We have the deal with Netflix. We partner with Netflix, and it's a creative collaboration between us and Netflix to make these documentaries. And, you know, at the end of the day, we really, our loyalties are with the audience that we make these for. You know, you really have to keep an audience in mind, especially for a story like the Danbury Trashers, where a lot of people are going to come to the story. Like yourself, like honestly myself, having never heard of the Danbury Trashers before, and you really have to keep that audience member in mind. But at the end of the day, you know, we worked with the Galantes for a lot of days on this. You know what I mean? It's not just a 10, 15, 20 minute interview where like, that a journalist would do. You know, I mean, we went to Danbury. You have dinner with these people. You talk with them. They welcome you into your homes. You film them for days and days and days. So you definitely get to know them and you spend a lot of time with them. But they know that we have a job to do. And they were really respectful of that. We showed them the completed version of the film. You're always curious to hear what your subjects, how they're going to feel about the film. It's never a huge priority that you want them to love it, but when they do love it and they do respond to it and they are respectful of the process that you did, that's kind of the dream scenario, and that's definitely what happened here.
Now, in any documentary, I'm sure it's difficult because there's certain things you leave out because you can't include everything. Otherwise, it would be maybe 3 hours long. So what was one thing that eventually got let that wasn't in that you wish was, or that you were like, oh, I want to share you this part of it because it wasn't in the
documentary? You know what? This was one of those productions, and I know everyone uses but the pandemic was not easy on us, you know, especially when you're a Netflix production and, you know, you have to be safe and follow policies and protocols. I think that there were some interviews that I really wish we could have shot, but just it wasn't someone like John Nasty Morassi. He wanted to be interviewed in the film, and I always planned on interviewing John Nasty Morassi, and the timing came, and all of a sudden we were all working at home and remotely, and there was no chance that we were able to get on a plane or honestly even fly someone into us. It was a new age of making documentaries and stuff. So there were a few interviews like that, especially Tough Guy Enforcers. Dave McIsaac was another one. Danny the Animal Stewart. You know, the Trashers were just so stacked with enforcers, and I always envisioned at least filming interviews with all these guys and seeing how they played into the film. Unfortunately, it didn't quite play out that way, but yeah, I think ultimately we were able to get almost everything that we wanted in. No one said no to us. We were able to interview everyone we wanted to, the pandemic aside, but that was pretty much we ended up getting everything we sort of wanted.
Well, you know what, McLean, as I was watching this documentary, like, it just piqued my interest, and I called some people that own the hockey world, and one of the funniest stories I heard, and I won't name the player's name, but there was a player who went there, played a very short period of time, he got a big signing bonus, and then he just left. Like, he just disappeared. And he was just like, you know, one of his buddies, they watched it, they're just like, man, after I watched that documentary, like, he's lucky to be alive at that time. Like, there was some of the guys, like, you know, Jason Strudwick was telling us about, like, Garrett Burnett, who only played 7 games, and how John Nasty Morasti had had a phone call with one of his buddies who was absolute animal on the ice, Chad Wagner, and basically just said, "Wags, come on in." And that was the Barry Melrose game, when Barry Melrose had kind of beaked off to Galante, and then Wagner they brought him in, and basically he just went nuts.
Yeah, it's one of the great stories. And the person who actually tells that story the best, that I wish we could have found a way to get it in, but Mike Rupp was in it. And, you know, Mike was explained it in a way that is totally understandable, where he's like, listen, I've come up through the minor leagues. I know what it's like when guys come down from the NHL. The other minor league players want to pick fights. They want to try and go after the top dog, and they want to throw fists. And he's like, I was just talking to Jimmy, and I said, listen, we're in the middle of a lockout. I really just want to keep my legs warm. I love this town. I love what you guys are doing here. I love the team you've put together. And Jimmy and AJ said, listen, Mike, look at our roster. No one is going to even touch you. And so in his first game, he's taking a long bus ride. I don't recall the city, but he's like, man, you know, it's an overnight bus trip, and it's like 1 a.m. Bus pulls over and doors open, and he's like, this guy Chad Wagner walks onto the bus, and I just couldn't. But and they picked him up for the game, and they took him into the opposing Knights arena. Absolute chaos broke through, and that was the one game he played. I mean, there's just so many, and it's like I think what's been fun to watch documentary out, which was my experience too, is you hear these stories and they almost take on this like mythic status. You don't really know if they're true so much or not, but then they get verified by several people who were there and they all kind of tell you the same version of that story. And you're like, oh my God, I guess it happened. It's pretty unbelievable.
Yeah. And Frank, the Animal by Lois, was on that team for a brief time. We've had him on Story Time, and Frank doesn't pull any punches. He would have fit right in with the Galante family. Let's just say that. He would have fit in perfectly well.
It's unbelievable, totally. I mean, it's one of those things where I got the footage back and I knew that they played a tough style of hockey, you know. And I like I said, I'm actually not the most knowledgeable hockey fan in the world. But as a filmmaker, I was just, I had this huge, I don't know, this messed up smile on my face, because I was just, look at these brawls and they're just throwing haymakers at one another and there's blood, and the referees would come out and scrape the blood off the ice and the fans would be going insane, and they do this like 8 times a game. Like, it wasn't just 2 fights or 3 fights. There was one period in one game where they had 8 major penalties in one period of one hockey game, and I always thought that was kind of, and it was like a Sunday night game too. I mean, it was just the way the trash is played. When I saw the footage, I was like, oh my God, it all became real, really real to me then.
Yeah, no, it was unreal. Well, McLean, great job on it. It's like Slapshot was fictional, was kind of based on characters, and then you see this show many years later and it's like Slapshot came to life. It was unbelievable. I highly recommend it to everyone. Untold Crime and Penalties, and the entire series, the entire Untold series on Netflix, I think, for sports fans who love documentaries. And they're all, you know, you got basketball, you got boxing, you got Olympics, you got hockey. It's fantastic. So thanks so much, McLean. I would love to get you back on again in the future. Really appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. Talk anytime.